Infamous countdown. 3, 2, 1. What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome to the Great Girth Podcast, bro. One half of your favorite fat duo here. I'm Tony with my other half, Mr. Austin Rawlison. Austin, I just realized that I always introduce you by full name, and I never fucking do that for me. So rude. It's kind of like putting you in front of a target, really. So let me start that over. I'm Tony Trujillo. I just hate my last name. It sounds terrible. Like, your name makes sense. Like, your name is like, okay, that's definitely a name if you went to the dentist or, like, DMV. That sounds like a person's name. My name totally sounds made up. That being
said,
because
it's Mexican, because it's Hispanic, that's pretty racist of you, Tony.
It's extremely racist. I'm just like, dude, why couldn't I have like a really strong name?
Like Smith.
like fucking Smith or like Harrison or something. I don't know. Or William. Fuck. Anything. Trujillo is not masculine. Dude, even like Gutierrez or like Dominguez, like those are all very, I don't know, like alpha in a sense, but Trujillo just sounds like the outcast version of Danny Trejo, bro. That's what it is. It's just, we don't fit in. But
that's my white privilege I got to take advantage of. So
I know, huh? You have that white privilege that lets you have such a good name. Dude, we'll talk about that because I have a little story to tell. In the meantime, though, how are you? How has your life been this week?
Insane. Run around like crazy. We did a 140-person catering today. But we were told before the event that it was only a 80-person catering. So lots of trying to figure stuff out on the fly.
He's like, so we have all this food and now nobody's eating. You mean to tell me we came all this way and not one person is getting fed like a fat fuck? It just reminds me of that fucking, you've seen Horrible Bosses, right?
Yeah.
When they hire the dude off Craigslist for wet works, and he's like, you mean to tell me I've driven all this way and not one person is getting peed on? And he's so pissed. Oh, dude, what a great, great time. That sounds like hell, dude. I can't complain, though. I've actually had it pretty easy with my job this week. It's been, yeah, I'm scared. I'm really freaking out because typically Monday and Fridays, slow as fuck. Tuesday and Wednesday, busiest days of the week. Thursday's hit or miss. Didn't go to work Monday. Had an issue. You had to use a paid day. So, you know, I still get paid for it, but I fucking was at home basically. All this week thus far, not one goddamn thing has happened. I'm so scared because when it rains, it pours. Tomorrow might suck. So right. I'm not looking forward to that. I'm a little freaked out. And yeah, I'm just grateful it's Friday, dude, because this week has gone by kind of quick, but like slow in a sense, dude, because when it's boring, I sit there and like, I start like thinking about shit. Like, God, what am I doing with my fucking life, man? Like just stupid shit, even though I have it good, you know? It's like you take a two take on shit. You're like, maybe I should start doing this better. Maybe right. And you make all these plans and then you never fall through with them.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to better my life. I'm going to do this and this and this. And then you do it. It never, nothing happens.
You start saying shit like, I'm going to force myself to get 8 hours of sleep. I'm going to walk for 30 minutes a day or at least exercise. You do it for like maybe a day. And then you're like, nah, fuck that. Like, I really should be getting more sleep because I've read in so many articles or so much research that says that if you don't get the preferred like 8 hours of sleep, you're technically killing yourself slowly. So that's right. That's why you hear adults say like, yo, you need to cut that shit out like soon as possible. And I'm 30 years old and I'm still sleeping 5-6 hours, sometimes 4.
Yeah. I'm lucky. Yeah. The past couple of months since I stopped doing political stuff for a job, I've actually slept a lot. Compared to what I'm used to sleeping, it's been pretty solid.
Oh, yeah, you're not up all fucking night, like, handling last-minute shit, which is actually pretty good. I mean, that's extremely healthy for you, so.
Right.
you know, I guess I have no excuse, man. I just fucking lay in bed and I watch movies all night, and then I'm like, oh shit, I need to be up in 5 hours, so time to pass out. So if you think about it, I really only get like 4.5 hours if I'm lucky. But damn, dude, we got a lot of shit coming up. We have WrestleMania next weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Watch party at my house Saturday. Just kidding. Only people that I know are invited, and I want all nine audience members showing up to this shit. Like,
well, you said to come.
Dude, well, you work Saturday, huh?
I'm going to Nebraska to hang out.
I was going to say, you should come over one of those nights, but never mind. It's all good, dude, because I'm honestly, like, because WrestleMania started doing two nights fucking for the last couple years now, it's made it hard, like, planning this shit out with people. Like, my dad and I will, or my stepdad and I will hang out, you know, because it's a tradition in my family to, we do hot wings and we watch WrestleMania. Well, now we have to decide what night. Typically, it's Saturday night because we both work on a Monday. I took that Monday off so I could stay up and watch it because WrestleMania runs to like 9 or 10 almost. But my stepdad still has to work, so that means we're doing it Saturday. The problem is Saturday night's usually the boring night. Actually, last year's Saturday was what better than Sunday, but typically all the better matches are Sunday, like the main event and all that, so I'll be watching that by myself. But Saturday I've got like a buddy coming over and some family. We're going to watch some good old fake-ass wrestling. I mean, there's no way other way to put it. That's just the way. Oh my God, dude, this is kind of off topic of what I was going to get at, but I think I've talked about this before. Have you ever seen the movie No Country for Old Men by the Coen brothers?
Yeah.
Dude, I watched it again just because I love that movie. And man, Javier Bardem, dude, he's fucking creepy in that movie. Like the whole scene where he's like talking to the store clerk and he tells him to call it when he flips the coin. That right there is the scariest part of the whole movie. Like he is so fucking insane. And I told my boss, you know what you got to do when you're about to fire someone or you're going to have a talk with them? Just flip that coin and tell them to call it. And when they look at you like, what? Be like, how much have you ever lost in a coin toss? Everything in your life has led to this moment. And just freak them out. Like, do that creepy scene, dude, because that shit is so hard to watch. It's so uncomfortable. It makes you uncomfortable watching it. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. I had to burp for a second there. And to turn the mic off because I don't want people to hear my shit. I like burp and fart a lot, dude. So I'm sitting here like, oh shit, turn it off, I'm prairie dogging. So we have a little bit to talk about. Well, actually, you know what? Let's just dive right into it. I wanted to talk about Quentin Tarantino's films, which we have done before, but we've never actually like ranked them. Now, I did send you the list. Have you seen all of them or are there some that you're missing?
No, I've seen all of those.
Perfect. So then we can kind of, you get the idea, you get the gist, and we can rank them. My question to you is for our listeners, did you want to rank them best to worst or like start from number 10 being worst all the way down to one being the best?
Yeah, we'll go from worst to best.
Okay. And that's going to be difficult for me, dude, because I've never seen a Tarantino movie that I didn't like. So this will be really, it's going
to
be tough.
You guys are aware of what the behind the scenes of what happened. Tony asked me to do rank Quentin Tarantino movies. And I was like, oh, the new Pinocchio movie is Quentin Tarantino.
And without question.
It is not.
And I was going to say, that's not a Tarantino. I didn't know he made Pinocchio. He was like, oh, shit, different director. Never mind. That would be cool. I mean, it would be insane, dude. It would be an R-rated film. Be Pinocchio killing people, which they've done before. That's a horror film called Pinocchio's Revenge.
Yeah, because Guillermo del Toro did the Pinocchio movie, and I was like, oh, well, yep, nope.
I still have yet to see it, though. Is it on Disney?
No, because it's not a Disney movie. This is not the Pinocchio with Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because Guillermo did do one that's like kind of a darker version, or at least more realistic. Yeah. Oh God! Who was in that one that he did?
It's all animated, so I don't think it's really anybody.
Okay. Well, Guillermo del Toro is a good director too, man. I love Hellboy. Pan's Labyrinth is a freaky ass movie. He did that. The Shape of Water, whatever the fuck it's called, that's a good one too.
Yeah,
he's done some pretty good films. Let's see, Tarantino. I've done this list like numerous times. I'm going to probably readjust it as I go because it's so hard, dude. Tarantino is the man. Like, he's not my number one favorite director, but if I had to pinpoint who the best director of all time is, he's definitely up there. He's one of. If not, he is the best director of all time because, love him or hate him, he's never made a movie that had bad reviews. Some of them were mixed, but if you really look at them, they're all phenomenal movies. So it would crucify him to say, he's not the greatest. He's fucking one of the best. But if I had to pick, like, to start off, because he's technically done 10 movies, but Kill Bill 1 and 2 are considered one film, but because they were released separately, I'm going to consider them two different movies. So I'll start, and then I'll let you go. We'll go one by one. Number 10, in my opinion, my least favorite Tarantino movie, which is why it's number 10, is Kill Bill Volume 1. The Kill Bill movies I had a hard time with. They're good movies. I won't lie about that. I think they're great. They have a good story. The execution is kind of where I'm like, they don't really... Like, you know when you watch a movie like by Tim Burton or anybody that's similar to Tarantino, whenever you watch his movies, you know you're watching a Tarantino film. Or you know you're watching a Martin Scorsese picture or whatever. That's how these are, but they feel very off from what he's done before. They're just... It's really different, and that says a lot because he's done Western movies and revenge flicks and all that. So it's, you know, he's done different shit, but they all feel the same. But Kill Bill Volume 1 to me is, it's a good movie, yes, but I would give it like 3.5 stars. I mean, it's not his best work. That's my opinion. I know I'm going to piss a lot of people off. No, it's not because the lead is a female. I thought Uma Thurman was awesome. Again, I like the movie. It's got a good story, but... It was a slow burn for me. The second one's way better, but I'm ranking number 10 as Kill Bill Volume 1. But your turn.
No, my number 10 is probably Hateful Eight.
I can kind of see that. That was going to be... Go ahead, though, before I interrupt you.
No, but it's like, it's one of those ones that, like, if you think about all of his movies, this one kind of sticks out the most as... least one of his movies. It's kind of around the same lines as you were talking about Kill Bill Volume 2, but I think Kill Bill 2 is just slightly feels more like one of his movies. And at the end of the day, I think it tries too much. It tries to make Gunsmoke, but I think it kind of fails to make it really as impactful as what you'd really want from something that big. And I think it's not a bad movie, but it's right. Just, it's not up to the same standards that you expect from all the other ones. And I think it's the worst one by, and it's pretty close between Kill Bill Volume 2, which is spoiling my number 9, but I think you're spot on with a lot of the things you said with Kill Bill Volume 2, but ditto for this exact movie.
That actually works perfectly for me because Hateful Eight was going to be number 9 for me. So I do like it. You know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie, but I was sitting there and it didn't satisfy my needs because when I go to see a Tarantino movie, I want to see Tarantino shit, which I got some of. This movie feels weird. It's like, it does feel like he kind of ran out of ideas. I mean, the best way to put it is this movie is what would have happened if Django Unchained wasn't a success. Hateful Eight was definitely, he was riding on the success of a spaghetti Western Civil War era type film. So, I mean, I think that he saw what he did with Django and cashed in on it and made Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight, fun little fact, there's actually 10 of them. There's two characters that technically don't count, but if you do the math, there's 10 people. it's another Western movie. It's very similar to Django, but Django's by far the better version. But they're almost the same movie, and the ending for me is what kind of killed it. I was like, that was really stupid. I mean, it was in Tarantino fashion, but I just didn't. It didn't click with me. I think a lot of it had to do with, the way it was executed, just like Kill Bill Volume 1. And the way that you know, they don't really do, Tarantino's known for jumping back and forth in his films. This one kind of does that, but not necessarily. And what I didn't like was Tarantino narrating certain parts of it. That was just, and I understand this movie was meant to be a spaghetti Western, like a corny, outrageous version, but it tried so hard that it became a parody of it, in my opinion. So, like I said, it's a good movie. I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's also not great. That is why Hateful Eight for me is number 9. So I'm assuming your number 9 is going to be Kill Bill Volume 1 or 2.
Yeah, it's number 2. I think that, well, number 1 is, I think both Kill Bill movies are pretty garbage. Kill Bill Volume 1 has really, really awesome moments, followed by putrid garbage, but also has awesome, like, fight sequences. Kill Bill Volume 2 has one or two shining lights, a dumpster fire of a plot, and the combat is by far less than Volume 1. It's just, it, the whole relationship between her master and it, like, it's all fake. It's a bunch of, like, oh, here's, they're telling us, oh, these guys have such a great relationship, but you never see it. It drives me nuts. I think it is a worse movie than The Grateful Eight, but it is The Hateful Eight.
You're an asshole. You know you fucked up. It's The Hateful Eight. What a dick.
No, but it's a worse movie, but it's a better Tarantino movie, so it gets slightly ranked higher. But, I mean, ever so slightly.
No, I feel that. Like, Volume 2 is closer to my best part. We'll get there, but I'll explain why. But I see where you're coming from, because I hear that from a lot of people. The problem is Tarantino makes good movies, even when you don't necessarily like it. You're like, this is a good film, but it's not what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what a lot of these are. So, like, for me, number 8, I actually love this movie, like, dearly to my heart, but it's definitely not one of his greatest movies. It's Death Proof, which was part of his grindhouse picture that he did with film director Robert Rodriguez. What they did was they made a movie that was based on how in the 70s and 80s there were grindhouse pictures. They were over-the-top, gory, horror action films that you would see for, like, the cost of a fucking nickel or whatever. And you go see 2 or 3 pictures back-to-back. That's what they call a grindhouse flick. Good examples of them are, you know, Hobo with a Shotgun. Machete is kind of a watered-down version of Grindhouse, but that's, you get the gist of it. Robert Rodriguez did the first film, which is Planet Terror. I won't go into too much about that because that's not what we're talking about, but for those of you that don't know, Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino are pretty much lifelong collaborators and friends. They had done From Dusk Till Dawn together. Robert Rodriguez is known for making Machete, making the Spy Kids movies, Desperado, so on and so forth. But Death Proof, for me, ranks at number 8 because it's not as strong as film. Again, I do love it. It's got a good plot. You got Kurt Russell, fucking awesome actor. I love him more than anything, really. He's one of the greatest actors of all time. He plays a psychopath. I had never actually seen him play a bad guy before, so this was kind of like a change, you know? And the idea is pretty spot on for a grindhouse film. He's driving around looking for hot chicks and his vehicle that he's death-proofed. It's a stunt vehicle. He supposedly used to be a stuntman. He picks up these girls, rides them around in his car, knocks that fucking car all over because there's a line in the movie that explains it. The car is 100% death-proof, but to get the benefit, you got to be in his seat. So there we have our film where he looks for hotties, runs into him with his car, kills him, psychopath. Well, anyway, he tries that with another group who decides to fight back, which is interesting. But again, while I love it, I love the concept, and I thought it was executed pretty, you know, on a pretty good level for what it was, it's definitely not his strongest. So that's why for me, Death Proof is number 8.
My number 8 is, I have it written down right here. Oh yeah. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
What? I love that one. But anyway, continue.
We're starting to get into movies that are objectively every movie after this is good. What level of good? I think this movie gets way too much credit because it's Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, so a lot of people kind of shut their brains off to... There are moments in this movie where the dialogue made me want to shove a entire Sharpie into my earlobe. and I understand Margot Robbie's in this, and I know that there's a lot of guys who... there is not a line Margot Robbie says in this movie that is delivered well. It is just people go, Margot Robbie, she's so pretty. I think Margot Robbie is one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood. And,
it's foggling.
And this movie is kind of getting a little bit of ire because of that. But I mean, I am. There's supposed to be so much suspense in this movie, and no matter what. How many times I watch this movie and I try to get invested and I try to feel like I'm on the edge of my seat, it just falls flat every time. I'm not in suspense at all. And it feels long to me, but I recognize it's a solid movie. Just every time I watch it, I'm just completely uninterested.
Well, it's long as shit too, dude. It's like 3 hours or something like that. It's a long fucking movie. But damn, well, I'm going to have to figure out how to make a positive out of that. So at number 7, I got Kill Bill Volume 2. Because, again, it's a good flick, just like the other ones I've named, but it's not what I wanted. I had a really love-hate relationship with the Kill Bill movies anyway. Kill Bill Volume 1 is good because of the action sequences, especially the end when she's killing off this entire crew of fucking ninja-like motherfuckers in total, like, grindhouse, almost like Chinese film, kung fu, almost like just that era. It feels similar to that era if you grew up watching Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee type shit. So, I mean, that was cool. But the reason I liked Kill Bill Volume 2 more was because there was more going on, in my opinion, in terms of the story. Now, I do agree with you where it was getting frustrating seeing the relationship between her and her fucking master. Like, David Carradine's a good actor, RIP. But the way that played out was kind of unsatisfying. And she goes through all these fucking troubles. And in this one, in my opinion, she goes through almost near death even more than she did the first one. All to get to Bill and then kill him with one hit to the heart. I don't remember the name of it, but it's something that got brought up because it's a real move that can actually kill someone or whatever. But the way that ended, like just like that, that was quick. I was like, what the fuck? I liked it more than the first one because I liked the story. I thought it progressed a little better, but just the fucking less action, less gore, and then the small-ass 10-second fight scene that wasn't really even a fight scene. That's what killed it for me, honestly. Like I said, I've got a love-hate relationship with them. They're okay movies. I think that they're good. They're just not great. So that's why Kill Bill Volume 2 for me is at number 7.
My number 7 is Jackie Brown.
Motherfucker. Keep going.
One of my main criticisms of most of Quentin Tarantino's movies I watch are they always feel like they're trying so hard.
Yes, very true. I will give you that.
This movie feels like the entire movie, the entire film, this poor lady is running directly into a wall, trying as hard as she can to get absolutely nowhere.
To get the fuck out of there. She's stuck constantly.
This person has zero. She doesn't get better. She doesn't get smarter. There's no development.
She just gets fucked the whole time.
The story is great.
It's a good book, too.
This character has no growth the entire movie, and it drives me nuts.
He's like, what the fuck?
Grow, motherfucker. Grow. Learn something. For the love of God.
It's a different film, and I'll get into that more when I talk about it. Oh shit, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh no, that's about it. That's why it's number 7, because that's about all I can say about it.
So this one's gonna shock a lot of people and might piss a lot of people off. But at number 6, and here comes the shocker, for me, number 6 is Pulp Fiction. I know this is the movie he's most known for. I know everyone loves this movie. I don't like it that much. It's good. I'm not gonna lie, it's good. This is a 5-star film, bro. Like, I'm willing to admit this is a great film. It's fucked up too. You watch it, I don't have to say much about it. Just the rape scene in general, it's fucked up, and it's funny. It's intense. It's a crazy fucking movie. I mean, this is one of his best films, period. But for me, I'm like, eh. It gets pushed back further and further because I just didn't enjoy it as much. I think a lot of it has to do with it's one of the ones that I didn't see first. I think that might have been what it was, because I had seen, up until Kill Bill, I'd seen all of his movies except for Pulp Fiction. And I didn't watch Pulp Fiction until after I'd seen Inglourious Basterds. So for me, Pulp Fiction was like, that was not what I was expecting. It was still good. Like I said, I love it, dude. I have no problem saying it's a great film. But I couldn't dig it. I don't understand the hype around it. It's got some good fucking lines, though, man. I mean, the best scene, I think, in the movie, just in my opinion, is towards the beginning when they go into said person's house. They're looking for that briefcase with the fucking shiny gold object inside that we never know what it is. That's why this movie's great, by the way, all the ominous shit that we don't get answers to. But they're in there, and, you know, he's talking about the Big Kahuna Burger and why they use the metric system. And he's like, check out the big brain on Brad. And that's when he snaps on him. Say what again? I dare you, motherfucker. Like, that's hands down Sam Jackson's, like, greatest fucking film role. But for me, I'm ranking that one at number 6.
Yeah, you're smoking crack. My number 6 is The Django Unchained.
What the fuck? Oh, boy, let's hear this one.
I'm sorry. It's so historically inaccurate. It's not okay.
So, a lot of N-bombs.
There is a lot of N-words in this. Wait, don't say it like that. There are a lot of people who say the N-word a lot. Not that there's
like a lot.
I mean, that's one thing I can't really get over. It's an okay. It's a good movie, but there's a lot of really big historical discrepancies that make people who understand even a modicum of history go, excuse me? That's not remotely how that would have happened. But but in the end, I know it's a good movie, but I just can't get over some of the really historic nightmare of a clusterfuck this movie is sometimes.
Jesus. Well, yeah, it's a fictional film. I understand where you're coming from, though. Let's see, where the fuck are we? Oh, I'm at number 5 now. My bad, I keep forgetting that. So, for me, number 5 is Jackie Brown. The reason being is, I can't remember the author of the book, but it's adapted from the book Rum Punch. Book is great. The movie's pretty much faithful to the, you know, the material. I mean, they change it a little bit, but I think the reason I like it is because even though this is a different type of movie, it still feels like a Tarantino film in a way, but it is different. You watch it and you're like, this is not how Tarantino would have made it if he had complete control. Granted, this is the only film he made that wasn't his original material. This is from a book, and it's a good book. I love the movie, though. I love the acting. It's long as shit, though. That's the hardest part. Like, all of his movies are long as fuck, but when they feel long, that's when you know it's not great. And you're like, holy shit, this is taking forever.
Yeah,
that was this movie. It was like a slow-ass burn, but I mean, I loved it. I wasn't a fan of how De Niro gets treated in it, but it made sense. Like, he fucking kills him because he's a loose end and shit, and Sam Jackson's scary as always. But I do agree with people when they're like, this isn't really a Tarantino movie. Like, well, yeah, it wasn't his material. This is a movie he directed based off of a book. So the attempt was good. It could have been better. However, I do feel like Tarantino was the right fit for it because it falls in line with what he does. It's just, it's definitely not his work. I do love the story, though. Robert Forster is one of my favorite actors. De Niro is one of my other favorite actors. Fucking, there's a ton of people in this movie. The storyline is just out of control, though. Like, it's a good story, but like I said, if you really look at it, like, this is so fucking insane. Like, this woman, dude, it's just constant failure for her. And the ending is kind of unpleasing. You're like, that's stupid, but whatever. Like, you know, I guess, but that's why Jackie Brown, to me, is going to be number five.
So, and my number five is Death Proof. Now, Death Proof and a Django were close, but Kurt Russell wins because Kurt Russell's Kurt Russell.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's probably the best stunt work of any of the movies, of Tarantino's movies. And I mean, the last 45, 30 minutes of this movie is the best 30 minutes of any movie in Tarantino's. And I think it's one of the best 30 minutes in last half an hour, 40 minutes in any movie ever, like top 10. So I think it's just, I mean, it's kind of gross. It's kind of aggressive, but it's all worth it in the end because, I mean, it's awesome.
Oh yeah. It's a fucking awesome flick. I mean, I tend to, you know, like gear myself towards it because of the fact that it's a cheesy film, but it's made in a very good way. Like it makes bad look good in a sense. So, I mean, I agree with you. However, let's see where this is where, what am I on, number four? Yeah. So I think I'm on number four. What the fuck am I missing? Hold on. No, we're right. I'm on number four. Okay, so for me, number four is Django Unchained. I will say it right because Austin's dick. The Django, the D is Silent Hillbilly. Boom! Fucking, I love this movie, man. It's kind of a return to Tarantino's form, but it's also super exaggerated. It's over the top, and I am a gore hound. I love gore. This movie had plenty of it, in my opinion, a little too much. Not even like really gory. It's just like when someone gets shot, dude, they explode. Like it's just like it's like when you step on a bag of ketchup and it just into bubbles. That's right. This fucking movie, dude. Like every time someone gets shot, it's out of control. Now, I'm not a big Jamie Foxx fan, but I thought he was awesome in this movie. Christoph Waltz as the bounty hunter dentist is fucking amazing. He was great in Inglourious Basterds. I love him. I think he's a great actor. But for me, the saving grace of this film that really made this film was DiCaprio, because Leonardo DiCaprio, how he never won an Oscar for The Departed is fucking beyond me, or how he didn't win an Oscar for this film. Like, this film is just like, the fuck are people smoking, dude? I never thought I could see him as a bad guy. He is pure evil. You want this fucker to die. He is so believable, you forget it's DiCaprio. Like, you really believe it's Calvin right. Candy. But it is an over-the-top film. I think it's one of his best movies. However, you got to sit through all the fucking N-words, like, N-word this, and almost every sentence starts with an N-word, dude. To the point where it's funny at first, shocking the second time, and then the third time you're like, holy shit, dude, some high schoolers made this movie. Tarantino is known for lots of N-bombs, dude. Like, I think when he goes to a studio and sells it, we're going to have a fucked up story, lots of gore, lots of uncomfortable scenes, and a ton of N-words. And they're like, sold. That's it. So Django Unchained for me is number four. I wanted to put it further, but it doesn't quite meet the next three that I'm going to speak about.
My number four is the first Kill Bill. I talked about how the first Kill Bill has some scenes and some stuff that's just absolute dog shit.
Sorry, I'm trying to hold it in. Go ahead.
There are other parts of this movie that are just so good. It's like You know them Bean Boozles where you get a whole big jug of like jelly beans and half of them are really good and the other half are trash?
Yes.
Watch this movie. It's like, take one out and you go, oh, that's a really good. That's a tutti frutti. Then you take it out and you're like, what? This is vomit. This tastes like vomit. Why am I eating this vomit? That's what this movie is. It's a constant. It constantly wears you. It does. It wears you down because you're.
Yeah, it does.
You're constantly like, I don't want to watch this movie anymore because this was so good, but I know it's coming. Sadness is coming right around the corner. I can feel it coming. And it comes up. It hits you. It pisses you. It pisses you off because there's nothing else you can do other than just, you know, it sucks.
It does. Yeah. But it's still a good flick.
It really sucks sometimes, but it's almost worth it to go through the pain.
I can see some that. Different
stuff. So,
I think you might have changed my mind. I might have to rearrange that on my list. We'll think about that. I don't know. At number three, I have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Reason being, I didn't have high hopes for this film when I heard what it was about because this was like a long couple year process that people were hearing about it online because Hateful Eight got leaked online. That's kind of what led to the demise of its premiere. So that happened here too. People were leaking the story. Tarantino was kind of, he's tight-lipped about his movies, but he opens up with small things. And he said this one was going to be a take on the Manson murders. That's not what this movie's about at all. I mean, that leads up to it, but this is where I'm going to complain about it first. I don't like how this movie is. This is conflicting because I like this, but I also hate it for this reason. So I love that this movie is basically a love letter to the golden age of cinema. That's why I love this movie. It's fantastic. However, I hate that because they spend so much time focusing on that. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, this guy lives next door. This guy lives next door to Sharon Tate. Like, that's why this comes in. It's almost like so fucking random. You almost really didn't need the ending with Charles Manson. You could have ended it in any other way. It wouldn't have had to have the shit with Spawn Ranch and Brad Pitt. It didn't need that ending. Like, you could have made this movie without it. However, I love it. You watch and you're like, that's fucking Tarantino when he's smashing her head into the fireplace and Brad Pitt's all tripping on acid. And he's like, I know you. You came in on a big old horsey. And he was like, I'm the devil and I'm here to do the devil's work. He's like, nah, your name was much dumber than that. It was like, I love this movie because it's a love letter to the golden age of cinema. It makes a lot of references to, you know, really what we'd call the good old days of movies, the original, the peak of Hollywood. And I don't know why. I fell in love with this movie. I had no high hopes, no high expectations. I went in. I fucking loved it. And, you know, I'm one of those people. I was like, dude, DiCaprio and Pitt, finally, for the first time, they had great chemistry. My only real complaint with this movie was, again, you didn't need the ending. You really didn't have to throw Charles Manson in there. I get it. It took place around the same era. But again, it just felt kind of random. Like, let's pull this curtain back. And he lives next door to Sharon Tate. Guess what? Vallejo Drive. Want to know what comes next? The Manson murders, except for in a very Tarantino fashion where these motherfuckers get hacked. So again, it's cool, but it's like, you don't need that. This movie's random. I'll admit that. As much as I love this movie, and I think that it's definitely worth number three, the third greatest film he's ever made, it's super fucking random. That almost kills it, but I love this movie. I love the way Brad Pitt basically fucks up Bruce Lee the Better Lee. And I know that pissed a lot of people off, but it's hysterical. It's Tarantino's world. Manson's people ended up killing Sharon Tate and taking her baby out and all this fucked up shit. In Tarantino's world, that doesn't happen. So, I mean, it's forgivable and it was funny. I laughed. I thought it was great. It is a long movie. This is a fucking 3 hour or so movie. But for me, it's number three because it's a love letter, man. It's even a love letter to Tarantino, in my opinion. This is probably one of his strongest works.
Yeah. So my number three is Inglourious Basterds.
Woo! Love that movie.
It's so good. It's phenomenal. where, to quote Django's Rechained, that
Rechained. This dude's a dick.
That movie is leaded with horrible historical historical discrepancies. It's actually pretty solid. Inglourious Basterds is when it comes to his history, and what it gets painfully incorrect is not so impossible for me to ignore.
Oh, I know what you're about to say.
So, I mean, and I mean that the opening scene is just so gut-wrenching and just blows your socks off so hard that first scene alone made it a classic, and that's why it's there. I love it. It's really awesome.
Shoot, I'm glad you said that, because that was my next one. Number two for me is Inglourious Basterds. I love this fucking movie, dude. Like, it's not number one for me, because there's a difference between the best film he ever made and your personal favorite. My personal favorite is Inglourious Basterds. This movie, if it wasn't so Tarantino, this film would be considered an art piece. It's fucking awesome. Everything about it is great. The acting, the story. This is a total Tarantino movie. This is his world. It's a World War II super ultra-violent Jewish revenge fantasy. That's what this movie is. And I knew going into it that something was going to happen to Hitler and all of them, and they do that. You know, spoiler, they murder these motherfuckers. Like, it's so fucking awesome, dude. And it's so funny. It's just, like, over the top. What I love about it, too, the most, I think, is Brad Pitt. He is... Dude, like, as much as I don't like him as a person, he's such a good actor. He can pretty much do anything. And this was a good example of that. He plays a fucking redneck, basically, like a tortured soul that is ready to torture these fucking Nazis. Like, who doesn't want to see a movie about people killing Nazis? Let's be honest. Yeah, that's like exactly. A favorite pastime. So to me, because this movie is so beautifully shot, because the story is so amazing and so over the top, I'm putting it at number two, and I gotta be honest, Christoph Waltz is the Jew Hunter, or as they call him. It's what made me fall in love with him, and you're right, dude. The opening scene is probably not only what sets the stage, but it's probably the best scene. It's what makes you realize this is what I'm in for. And Christoph Waltz, dude, he is so scary. He can make a dude who's providing for his family cry with fear. Like, you get uncomfortable watching him, dude. That's why I'm like, this movie is insanely good. This is my favorite Tarantino film of all time, but it's not number one for a different reason. As I said, there's a difference between your favorite movie and the best movie. But Inglourious Basterds is my number two.
Now, Tony, I know you have a weird, like, borderline sexual obsession with, you know, like, mafia movies. And
100%.
but Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction is better than Reservoir Dogs. It's not close. Reservoir Dogs,
fucker.
It's not close. You're an insane person.
You are insane
for having. But Reservoir Dogs is amazing. It's his second best movie. It is. It's really good. It's one of the pillars of mafia movies. It's what made Tarantino, kind of cemented Tarantino as this, like, pillar of filmmaking. And the some of his other movies, he himself acts or does dialogue in some of these movies, and every other time it sucks.
I was gonna say, I kind of agree with you.
But in Reservoir Dogs, it works. It's good. It's gonna be. It's awesome. There's not a lot you can't say. It's already been said about it. It's really good.
And that's where I'm different, because I'll admit I'm biased for why I like it. But I think after viewing it a bunch of times back to back with all the other ones, to me, Reservoir Dogs is number one. I think it's his best film of all time. And I know that's kind of predictable to say, because it's his first film he ever made. Well, first wide release film. Not only, yeah, did it cemented who he is, and it's the most talked about film he's ever did. That and Pulp Fiction, they're the two most talked about films he's ever done. To me, Reservoir Dogs is just, it's got the best storyline. And like I said, I am biased. It does fall in line with my love for mafia films. And like this movie, even though they don't openly say the word mafia, they're a mafia. They're criminals. They're pulling off a heist. And I think the best part about this movie is the fact that we never actually see the robbery take place. Just the fallout. And that's because the fact that it was a low budget film. This is his first movie, and everybody that was on set had to provide their own costume. But you watch this and you're like, dude, this was a cheaply made film. This is pretty damn good, even for the time. It's a professionally done film. The story is just great, though. Like, it's a whodunit, essentially. It's who's the rat in this group. And you get to find out right away who it is, but the other guys don't. And you're like, I want to see how this unfolds. Who can't love Harvey Keitel or Keitel, whatever, how the fuck you say his name? He definitely stands out in this movie, but the number one award-winning actor in this film is for sure Michael Madsen, because he is scary as shit. He's proved that so many times. This is the movie, I think, that made him cement himself in history as one of the best on-screen bad guys. So fucking evil. The torture scene is hard to watch. And you listen to like what really went on during filming. You hear how he was so uncomfortable doing it, how he's like, I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing. And Tarantino's just telling me, do what you want to do. Do that. Do more of that. Yeah, do that now and then do this. And he's letting him kind of do his own thing while guiding him. And it works out so well that when you see it, you almost don't believe what he's saying. You're like, dude, it looks like you knew what you were doing. You look like a sick motherfucker. It's just everything about this movie is fucking awesome. And I love how each, you know, chapter is about each character, each main character. I also love that there's two guys in it that you don't, you know, one of them got shot, Tarantino's character, spoiler. And then the older guy played by, I think it's Eddie Bunker. You don't know what happens to him. They never explain it. They're like, oh, no one knows where he went. And then, dude, who couldn't forget Steve Buscemi as Mr. Pink? Hands down, his best film ever made. Like, he's a good actor. You know, he's been in some good films. He's funny as fuck, too. But this movie, I think of him, I think of Reservoir Dogs. This is, oh, my God, dude. Like, I geek out. I love this movie. That's why this one, for me, is number one. I firmly believe this is his best film he ever made. Now, Austin, it's time for you to tell us why you think Pulp Fiction is best movie ever made.
Say what again?
What country are you from? What country ever? They speak English and what?
This is a good-ass cheeseburger. It's the most quotable movie of all time. It has the most iconic scene. Top 10 most iconic scenes in not just in Tarantino's movies. Any movie ever. It is.
Oh, yeah. People that have never seen this movie know what you're talking about when you quote it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most. When you say Tarantino, people think of this movie. The thing is, it goes past Tarantino. When people say John Travolta, people think of this movie.
Easily.
When you say, oh my goodness, Samuel L. Jackson, they think of this movie.
Oh, this yeah. This
was career defining for two of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
Especially at a time where their careers were going down fucking words, basically.
I mean, and our biggest all of it is, you don't ever watch this movie, not one time, and you look at it and you think, oh, what's going on in this movie? And by the time you even can answer questions, you're like, oh my God, this movie's over. What happened? You can feel when the movie starts to wind down, and you can feel yourself going, I don't want this to end. This is so good. Every scene leads perfectly into the next scene. Every line leads perfectly into the next line. It feels like an expert orchestrating, directing an orchestra. And it's just, it is every single cylinder gets hit on, and it's just undeniably it's one of the most perfect films ever made. I think it is top 10 movie of all time, not just of Tarantino's films, but maybe one of the greatest of all time. It's phenomenal. And the fact that you had it so low on your list is disgusting. and frankly shows why you like Man of Steel so much.
Here we go. I was waiting for that. I was waiting for the Man of Steel reference. I was like, he's gonna say some fucked up shit about Henry Cavill. I know it. But hey, dude, how about that Shazam sequel? I heard it sucked. I'm still gonna see it though.
No, I've heard it's terrible. No, I heard it's solid. No one wants to go watch it though.
Well, I mean, why bother? Because they're not gonna do anything after it. That's the sad part. You know, yeah, they said they were redoing everything. And I'm like, that fucking blows, man. I'd be pissed if I was making this movie and found out, oh, it doesn't matter actually.
Dude, did you heard? So the director of that was like, they asked him about how he feels about his movie bombing so bad. He goes, "Oh, don't worry about it. I knew it was gonna happen."
He's like, "It was gonna suck. This is what it is."
He goes, "We tried hard. We made a great movie, but we knew it was gonna bomb at the box office. That's nothing we could control."
Hey, at least he was honest. He knew what was coming. It's sad too because I do love the first one. I thought that was probably one of their better films.
I think it's the best DC.
I got to agree with you because I did like Joker, but if we're talking like the newer DC films, it's their best one. Shazam is by far the best one.
I've talked about just DCEU.
Oh, yeah, true, true. Because Joker is a different, it's the world of DC. It's completely different. Yeah, kind of like Dark Knight.
DC movie to pass it. It might be freaking the Batman with Robert Pattinson. Who would have thought that is a sentence we would say? You told me that 2015. I'm going to say the best Batman was Robert Pattinson. I would have laughed you off stage.
Well, you remember everyone's reaction when they found out they're like, fucking Edward Cullen, really? This movie's going to blow. And then you go see it, you're like, holy shit, this movie's fucking great. I met a lot of people that didn't like it because they didn't like how dark it was and how comical it was. And I was like, dude, that's fucking Batman. It's a detective comic. That's this movie.
There's so many people who don't know what Batman is. They don't know what Superman is. They saw the Nolan Batman movies and goes, that's Batman, and they want every Batman to be the Nolan films. And that's why, again, I'm so scared of Man of Steel that a bunch of people are going to see a good Superman movie like they're like watching Lois and Clark. Have you seen that on CW? Hello?
Jesus.
No, can you hear me?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. My shit straight logged me out for a second there. I was like, what the fuck happened? I was mad. I was like listening to you, then I was like, what the fuck? Like, my whole computer logged me out for a second there. Like, something with my Wi-Fi, but anyways, yeah, dude, I fucking love that one. Like, I still believe that Dark Knight Rises is the best Batman film of all time, but Robert Pattinson kind of put up a good fight if there was one between him and Christian Bale. Pattinson is 100% believable.
And like I was saying, one of the reasons why I'm worried about Man of Steel is because I think people are going to expect that to be Superman, and that's not Superman. Have you seen Lois and Clark on CW?
No, I think we've talked about this numerous times. I still need to get my ass on it.
It is the best live action Superman ever.
Oh, man. Christopher Reeves is the shit.
Dude, this guy is like Christopher Reeves Superman mixed with such a good version of it. Is a perfect mix of Christopher Reeves Superman with that like goofy smile and the like boyish charm and innocence. It's that's what made Christopher Reeves Batman or Superman so good. But his Clark never felt warm. It never quite felt humble enough. He always felt like Superman. He's so good, and don't get me wrong, he's phenomenal. But this Superman is perfect. If you, if anybody wants to know what Supermember looks like, and I know it's a CW show, I know it's a CW show. I know you think, oh, the Flash was so good this first season, and then it was trash for the rest of the season because there's a bunch of, it's a teenage drama that's not in Lois and Clark. Please go watch it. It's so good. I watched this, and I watched the entire thing like 9 times because it's just everything you want in a Superman, and it's like dad Superman. This is like Superman with kids, and it really allows him to shine. Like, no. We don't do it this way. We're going to do the right thing. And it's none of this stupid new, I'm Superman and I fight for truth, justice, and a better tomorrow. It is, I'm Superman. I fight for truth, justice, and the American way. And it's like, get them, Supes. Get them.
Like, yeah, fuck them up. I'm going to have to check it out. I mean, I keep saying that. Well, I don't know why I keep putting it off. See, I don't mind that it's CW. I don't know why people complain so much about the CW. Like,
oh, I get it. Arrow had 3 good seasons.
Yeah, I liked Arrow.
Arrow had 3 good seasons. Flash had 3 good seasons. And then it just turns into garbage. Like, garbage. Like, oh, me and this person have a tiny quarrel. It's going to destroy our entire friendship. And then they cry about it for 4 episodes. And then they get back together like nothing ever happened.
Well, my biggest problem with it was that everybody was becoming a superhero. Everyone and their fucking mom was becoming a superhero on the show. And I was like, okay, no longer believable. This sucks. But I liked Arrow. I watched some of The Flash. I never finished it. Now, that being said, I'm looking forward to the Flash movie we're getting, dude. I don't give a fuck about Ezra Miller. I just want to see Michael Keaton as Batman one last time.
Yeah, I want them to bring that guy who's Flash on CW in to be Flash. I think he's a really great Flash. It's not his fault CW turned their entire freaking TV show into a teenage drama.
Well, I guarantee you they will, because a lot of people like it. A lot of people are demanding it. And at this point, it doesn't sound like Ezra Miller will be playing Flash again. I mean, I hope so.
What happens when you punch a bunch of old ladies?
Yeah, when you slap the entire state of Hawaii, this is exactly what lands you. Him and his they, them, like, it, crazy.
That brings a whole other meaning to Aloha Oi.
Hola. Sorry. Before we close this up, I do want to take this time to give a shout out to the director Scott Goldberg and his upcoming film, The Forest Hills. Yes, I've been talking about this the past few episodes. Again, I'm trying to promote this movie as best as I can. It's an indie film. I will keep you guys updated as to when it's going to be released or at least distributed for purchase. I got to plug it in there, man. I got mad respect for Scott Goldberg. It's going to be a horror film. It's got Edward Furlong, Dee Wallace, fucking Shelley Duvall, and then Chico Mendez. Like, dude, I'm excited for this movie, man. I've been looking at stuff for it. I know this is just me plugging it and being a horror nerd, but guys, please help us promote this movie. Help us campaign it. If you want more information on it, you can check out at Scott Goldberg Official on Instagram. Reach out to him. Do whatever you want to do to help us get this thing going. It looks promising, though. They, like I said in the last episode, they had their world premiere. I'm fucking jealous because Kevin Smith was hosting it. Would have loved to have met him, but I don't live over there. So that being said, guys, again, help us get this indie film off the ground and to become a phenomenal masterpiece. Otherwise, we have reached the unfortunate end of the road, which sucks because I had fun doing this episode and I want to continue. But that's where part 2 would come in. So if you guys like what you heard here, you want to hear more, or you want to tune in to check out the follow-up to this episode because there's plenty of shit we got to talk about on top of more shit that'll be coming out. Check us out at thegreatgirthpodcast.com. Again, for all the deaf children in the back and all the pretty blue fairies, that is thegreatgirthpodcast.com. I am Tony, one half of your favorite fat duo, with my buddy Austin. Austin, sir, I will see you on the next one.
Adios.